Good morning, brethren and sisters, respected friends, and especially those Sunday school scholars who fall within the age brackets of, say, about 13 or 14 to 17 to 18. What we hope to do today is to enlighten you of what your responsibilities are according to the government in which you reside, as far as being ready and prepared for the so-called draft that will someday be coming. We know we had one years ago. They did away with it and went to a volunteer system. And now there is some talk that some point in the future we may need additional bodies, and what they would do at that particular point is they would institute the draft that had been years ago, and they would gather their bodies from within that system. A few other things that I'd like to do today is just to alert everybody as to what this agency that we might possibly be dealing with in the future is all about. There is one major area which we have to enlighten those individuals within the age bracket that I just spoke, and that is to make sure that they are on the right side of the law. We are told in the scriptures to be subject to the powers that be, and therefore we must abide by all their laws and ordinances. And if we are going to try to claim a special benefit, we better make sure that we are on the right side of the law. A couple of the phrases that you'll be hearing as I deliver this information to you is the term DOD, which stands for Department of Defense, and the SSS, which make no association with the SS of the Third Reich, but it will stand for the Selective Service System. And anything that I'm going to present to you today is very easily within your fingertips. It is on a website that is called www.sss.gov. Everything you need to know about this system, when it goes into effect, if it needs be go into effect, is all there. It's very cleanly written out, it's easily labeled, and it's not confusing. It's in pretty basic, easy language. So I will go through some of the areas that I consider that everybody should know about. One other thing is that the chairman of the committee, which is me, should have been holding meetings every 3 to 4 years, like we are doing right now. Last one we held was in 2004, so as you can see, I'm duly behind. But the reason for 3 to 4 years was to hopefully that we would let people know within that age bracket from 13, 14, and up to 18. If we held them every 4 years, then that age group would be no more than, 6 months away from being faced with all these questions that they might get hit with. And then 3 years, 4 years later down the line, we'd enlighten another group. So that moving forward every 3 to 4 years, we'd have everybody informed a couple of years before they were actually going to get involved with this. Okay, the vision of the Secret Service Selective Service System is: the Selective Service System will be an active partner in the national preparedness community that anticipates and responds to the changing needs of the nation. And I have no doubt that the only changing needs of the nation that this group will be involved with will be the institution of the conscription system. Their mission, the statutory mission of selective service, are to be prepared to provide trained and untrained personnel to the DOD in the event of national emergency, and be prepared to implement an alternative service program for registrants claiming a conscientious objector status. I'll give a little bit of a background on the Selective Service System. For more than 50 years, the selective service and the registration requirement for America's young men have served as a backup system to provide manpower to the U.S. Armed Forces. President FDR signed the Selective Training and Service Act of 1940, which created the country's first peacetime draft and formally established the Selective Service System as an independent federal agency. From 1948 until 1973, during both peacetime and periods of conflict, men were drafted to fulfill vacancies in the armed forces which could not be filled through voluntary means. In 1973, the draft ended and the U.S. converted to an all-voluntary system. The registration requirement, which is what we will be dealing with basically today, was suspended in April of 1975. It was resumed again by President Carter in 1980 in response to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. Registration continues today as a hedge against underestimating the number of servicemen needed in a future crisis. And it is the obligation of all male citizens, I will go over the different exclusions, there are some, to be registered at the age of 18. There are many ways to register, and some which you will be doing it and you don't even know it. The easiest and fastest way for a man to register is online, like everything else we do today. A man can fill out a form and send it to the Selective Service System. The form asks the young man's full name, address, date of birth, and Social Security number, if he has one. It's not necessary that he does have one. And he will send that form in after he has signed it. At the post office, which is another way that you can register, they have all the posts off in the nation have a mailback registration form. They are available supposedly in all U.S. post offices. A man can fill out, sign, leaving a space empty for his Social Security number if he doesn't have one, and just put a stamp on it and mail it into the Selective Service address, which is on there, without the involvement of anybody, postal clerk or anything. There is also a special additive here. Men living overseas that hit this age requirement, and they are outside of the country, they can enlist in any U.S. embassy or consular office. Now, two things above said, you don't need a Social Security number. Once you get your Social Security number, make sure you send it into the Selective Service to be in accordance with their rules and regulations. Another way, which is a very common way which people are doing it today, is a young man can register by checking the box. I'm sure all of you are continuing your education in some way, shape, or form, and probably filling out a FAFSA form, the Federal Aid Financial System or something. I don't know what the letters stand for. But on box number 22, there is a question that just says, register me. All you have to do is check the box, and the Department of Education will furnish the Selective Service System with all the information they need right from your FAFSA form. So it's seamless. One of the other ways that you can register is more than half the high schools in the country have a person at that school which is designated to help young men enlist. So that is another option to you. So you can see that the government is prepared. They have made many avenues available to you to register, so they're leaving us no excuse. Now, there is a whole page here which says, when are you supposed to register? Well, the law requires virtually all male U.S. citizens, regardless of where they live, and male immigrants residing in the U.S., that's permanent resident aliens, to register within 30 days of their 18th birthday. Therefore, to be in full compliance with the law, a man turning 18 is required to register during the period of time 30 days before his 18th birthday or 30 days after his 18th birthday, which gives you a fairly good-sized 60-day window. Now, if you miss it, late registrations are accepted, but once a man has reached the age of 26, he is no longer considered worthy for the draft, actually. In World War II, they found out that the peak of a male was at 26 years of age. They found out that the way the tanks rode, the ride was so bumpy that just driving in them would break bones in people that were 26 and above. The ones 26 and under were fine. So that's the age they came up that a male was no good after. Some would say much earlier than that, but a male non-citizen who first takes up permanent resident in the U.S. when he is at least 18 years old, but not yet 26 years old, must register within 30 days of becoming a resident. If he enters the U.S. as a resident when he is 26 years or older, he does not have to register with the Selective Service because he is too old. They also make it available for you now if you know you're going to be leaving and studying abroad and you're going to be not where there's an embassy or a consulate. I don't know where you would be studying if that were the case. It is now possible for a man to submit registration information early as long as he is 17 years and 3 months. The Selective Service will keep the information that he filled out at this particular date and process it within that 60-day window that we just spoke of. They also go over, once again, the different areas where you can register, but we're not going to belabor that point. You know all four of them. Now, the federal government, after you have finished your duty and mailed in your registration card, they will acknowledge it with a receipt in the mail, and it will arrive about 30 to 90 days after you have submitted your registration form. It is very important. Keep this and keep it in a safe place as proof of registration. We know that the government has been apt to make mistakes before, and let's hope that conscription was ever brought back into being, that you would have all the documentation that you duly need. Now, if you do not receive an acknowledgement card within 90 days of registering, or if you require a replacement acknowledgement card, you must call a Selective Service, and they will guide you through dial 1, dial 5. You have to go through all the rigmarole, and then they will mail you a new one. The other thing that they found very hard to control, and that was even back in the Vietnam era when people were being drafted, is that we all know that of this age bracket that's considered to be drafted between 18 and 26, that probably a time in your life when you're doing a lot of moving back and forth. You're going to school, you're going home, you're going here. And they could never get in touch with these people that they were drafting. So it is very important that you stay abreast with this department and give them the address of where you are going to be. And if you are going to be elsewhere, I make sure that you, who's ever getting your mail for you, would stay in strict touch with you and let you know if you ever get anything from them. And then they go through this section. If you move, you must let us know within 30 days of moving your new address. So, that one's done. Now, we'll go through who must register. And there are a bit of a few comical insertions here. It's not me inserting them, because when you hear some of them, you'll agree that they're a little bit strange. Who must register? Almost all male U.S. citizens and male immigrants living in the U.S. who are 18 through 25 are required to register with the Selective Service. It is important to know that even though he is registered, a man will not automatically be inducted into the military. In a crisis requiring a draft, men would be called in sequence determined by random lottery number and year of birth. Then they would be examined for mental, physical, and moral fitness by the military before being deferred or exempted from military service or inducted into the armed forces. Now they go into the bracket of non-citizens. Some non-citizens are required to register. Others are not. Non-citizens who are not required to register with Selective Service include men who are in the U.S. on student or visitor visas, and men who are part of a diplomatic or trade mission with their families. Almost all other male non-citizens are required to register, including undocumented immigrants. I don't see them running up to register for the draft and say that they're in the country. Legal permanent residents and refugees. The general rule is that if a male non-citizen takes up residency in the U.S. before his 26th birthday, he must register with the Selective Service. Dual nationals of the U.S. and other countries are required to register, regardless of where they live, because they are U.S. nationals. If anybody does not know what a U.S. Dual national is, we had that very first time I ever heard of that situation arising was in 1970 when we were having a gathering in Worcester, and the clubs were down there visiting, and she went into labor and had her son in the Worcester area. Now, he is considered a Canadian citizen because of his parents, but he is also a U.S. citizen because he was born in the U.S. At 18 years of age, he has to declare his citizenship. He has to go to one country or the other as far as the U.S. is concerned. The Canadian government, I think, will let him declare dual citizenship as well for the rest of time, but the U.S. is not like that. Hospital or incarcerated men, young men in hospitals, mental institutions, or prisons do not have to register while they are committed. However, they must register within 30 days after being released if they have not reached their 26th birthday. Disabled men, it's a very lengthy category. They still interview you and decide if it's a physical thing where you cannot serve whatsoever, then you would be subject to some type of rule that the conscientious objector is basically restrained to, unless they would find you an alternative service job. Let's see, what else do we have to go over here? We already covered the immigrants and the dual nationals. The other area that we want to enlighten everybody on is the conscientious objection and alternative service program. A conscientious objector is one who is opposed to serving in the armed forces and or bearing arms on the grounds of moral or religious principles. How to apply? In general, once a man gets notice that he has been found qualified for military service, he has the opportunity to make a claim for classification as a conscientious objector, or CO as termed. A registrant making a claim for conscientious objection is required to appear before his local board to explain his beliefs. He may provide written documentation or include personal appearances by people he knows who can attest to his claims, his written statement. When we must appear before this board, here is where we have to set ourselves apart. I remember my dad going through this in the Vietnam era, and they would have the people who were claiming for conscientious objection status. That day they would be doing their hearings. And I remember my dad saying, it's important that we stand out. But generally, he said, we didn't have any worry about it. Back in the Vietnam area, it was all the hippies who didn't want to work and who were living in state parks. And they would end up in the waiting room along with some Christadelphian men who were there with maybe a suit and tie on, who immediately distinguished themselves. But when you get called in to appear before your local board, they are going to ask you how you arrived at this belief that you feel, you know, should eliminate you from picking up arms to go to war. It's very easy to see the difference when you're sitting on a board between these two groups of people. One who comes in and does not appear like the best of a person, the other one who is, you know, appears outwardly. But then when you are able to give true attestation to your beliefs is much more impressive than the person who just says, this status is available to me through the government and I want to claim it. One of the other things we went through in Boston just recently, we discussed in a business meeting of how long we should hold on to all our records. And when I was starting to go through this, I remembered the status. There were varied opinions. But it is also very important that when we go before these people that we have nice, neat, clean records. And I remember my dad saying that the doorkeeper in the Boston Ecclesia at that particular point when I know my brother was one, and there were a bunch of other people his age that were going through this, that they walked in there and they had the records from when these children first started attending Sunday school 16, 17, 18 years ago. And they showed that, you know, he was there 50 Sundays this year, 48 Sundays this year, but that is something that substantiates our claim. So all the ecclesias should be well aware of this as well, that attendance records for these individuals known as Sunday school scholars are very important. It could be very important. They are very important to be kept anyway, but if conscription ever reappears, they will become immensely important. Where were we? Who qualifies for a conscientious objection status? Beliefs which qualify a registrant for CO status may be religious in nature, but don't have to be. Beliefs may be moral or ethical. However, a man's reasons for not wanting to participate in a war must not be based on politics, expediency, or self-interest in general. The man's lifestyle prior to making his claim must reflect his current claims. Now, the services that we will be placed in, if this ever happened, there are two types of services available to the conscientious objectors. And the type assigned is determined by the individual's specific beliefs. The person who is opposed to any form of military service will be assigned to alternate service, as described below. The person whose beliefs allow him to serve in the military, but in a non-combatant capacity, will serve in the armed forces, but will not be assigned training or duties that include the use of weapons. The alternative service program conscientious objectors will be placed into. Many of the jobs deal with conservation. Caring for the elderly was added a while back. The educational system fulfills some vacancies. And the healthcare system is now becoming a big one. Now, this whole status of claiming conscientious objection, I remember Brother Gary Smith was explaining his induction into the Army. And I could tell by the way he was talking about it that it was probably a pretty frightening experience when you must, strip down to your skivvies and stand in a line with 1,000 other men and just wait till you get right up to the front of the line when you have to say no. When they want you to swear your allegiance to the country or the government and you have to say no at that point in front of all these people and they drag you out aside and then start questioning you. It's not handled like that anymore. I think we read in the first paper, when you have to alert the country if a draft is in process, that you are a CO before you get into all the depth. They want to save themselves some time. They don't want people going right up to the last straw and then causing all the commotion. If you are a valid CO, they will deal with you up front rather than going into this whole process, which I'm sure they waste time and money, and it wastes time for you. But I could tell by Brother Gary's face that this probably was not a pleasant experience. I'm sure other people, I don't know what war that you were drafted for. Civil War you might have been drafted for, right? No, I think it was a Vietnam War, wasn't it? Vietnam. But I could tell by the way he talked about it that it was not a pleasant experience. And I never had to deal with it. The year that I graduated high school in 1973, the draft was done, so I escaped. I know my brothers didn't above me, and I remember all the Sunday school scholars that my father coached through all this, and I guess, I don't know, they all got their status, they all did their work, some were disqualified medically anyway, but I don't think any of the other sections that, I know I got to leave time for Brother David to give the BCAF committee report, I don't think any of the other sections here are really important. The big thing we have to remember is to be on the right side of the law, register when we're supposed to. And, if we're doing everything we're supposed to, we'll be taken care of. Also, I want to let you know that there are 4 people that you can get in touch with anytime you want. We have myself up in the Northeast. We have Tennessee. We have Brother Johnny Phillips and Brother Jim Rankin. And down in Texas, we have Brother Jim Phillips. So we have a fair amount of people all over the place. If anything ever happened, those would be the immediate responding people to help you with any paperwork or anything that you have to get done. But any other questions you have, you can see me afterwards. Or, like I say, this online site is filled with everything you need to know. They cover their bases very well, which leave us no excuse or reason for mistake. But anything myself or any one of those other three committee members can do for you, just shout out. We'll take care of you.